I'm Emmeline Pat Dahlstrom from Spacebase, a social enterprise focused on catalyzing the space entrepreneurial ecosystem in New Zealand to solve challenges on Earth and beyond. You're listening to the Spacebase podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Sarah Kessens. Sarah is a US-born New Zealand scientist and biochemist, a multinational champion in rowing, and was in the top 50 applicants out of over 18,000 in the NASA astronaut program. She's earned degrees in plant and molecular biologies, worked on a plant-based HIV vaccine, and is now working at the cutting edge of synthetic biology solutions to combat climate change, facilitate space colonization, and advance innovations in medicine and agriculture. Most recently, she got a $500,000 Catalyst grant from Callahan Innovations to support her proposal to develop nanosatellites for protein crystallization over the next 3 years. In this interview, we are going to ask her more about her career, her work as a space biochemist, and her recommendations for researchers and scientists out there interested in the space industry. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So you're originally from the US. Can you tell me more about your journey from there to New Zealand?
Absolutely. So I came out to New Zealand a little over 7 years ago now, intending to stay for a 2-year postdoc. So sort of my career path, I went from Southern Indiana, where I got into scientific research in high school, had a phenomenal science research teacher in high school that got me really interested in sort of plant biology and understanding the natural world. So went on to an undergraduate degree at Purdue University, focusing on plant biology, and really enjoyed the scientific research as an undergraduate. So went on to my PhD at Arizona State University, working on a plant-based HIV vaccine, and really got interested in biochemistry and how sort of the underlying molecular machinery was responsible for developing all sorts of really cool things. And so applied for a postdoc position here in Canterbury, at the University of Canterbury. And like I said, I intended to stay for my 2-year postdoc, but things have gone really well here. And so I had a couple postdocs and a research fellowship, and now I'm a lecturer here in the School of Product Design.
I meant to ask you the question of why biology. Was that something that you were really fascinated when you were young? If you can just give a little bit more of a background.
Absolutely. So I grew up on 160 acres in Southern Indiana, again, in the middle of the country, mostly forests, a lot of agricultural land. And so plant biology and just plants in the natural world in general were everywhere around me when I was growing up. And like I said, I had a fantastic science research teacher, Miss McElroy, that basically for the first couple years that I was there, it was the East Washington School Corporation. I was a new kid there for a little while. Anyways, but Miss McElroy basically saw that I loved science and tried to get me involved in her science research team. And I sort of I tried to avoid her in the hallways a couple times just because she was really adamant about getting me on this science fair team. But eventually, she won me over with the prospect of getting some scholarships. And so I joined the science research team. And again, I already had a beginning passion for science, but she saw that I really enjoyed, you know, being outside on the farm and going into the forest. And so she just basically took my natural curiosity and the questions that I was asking just in general, just because I was curious about them, we developed into a science research project. And so one of the questions that I was always interested in was why there were no plants growing in these red oak forests. And so basically did a research project of understanding a phenomenon called allelopathy, which is basically when it rained, there were tannins and compounds that basically leached out of the red oaks and went into the forest floor and prevented other plants from growing. And so basically took that natural concept and developed that into a natural herbicide from the leachates of the red oak sawdust, which is a big waste product there in Indiana. So again, that was my initial foray into scientific research, and I absolutely loved it. And I was really fortunate in that Purdue University, which is one of the major research universities in Indiana, has a phenomenal plant biology program. So, So my freshman year, I was really lucky to get into a research lab in the botany and plant pathology department, and again, sort of got my hands dirty in the research lab there, and there, basically from then on, it was there wasn't really a chance of getting out of it. Just really fell in love with the research environment, and again, still learning things about the natural world, whether it was how, you know, plant hormones are biosynthesized, so basically how do plants grow, to cell wall biosynthesis, to how do plants actually form the structures that make up the plants. Yeah, so that's how I got into it. Just absolutely fascinating to me, really.
And can you tell me a little bit more, what is the connection between the bio part of your career and your space focus?
Absolutely. So growing up, you know, in the middle of the U.S., it was a natural thing to become a plant biologist. You know, there's both agriculture and forests and plants everywhere. But what's not as obvious is how to connect that to a space career. But what has been really cool here over the last couple decades is all the research that's been going on the International Space Station. And prior to that, during the shuttle era as well, there were quite a few biological experiments. And so what's been really cool is to follow the research that's been going on the space station. And now with basically, you know, new launch providers providing more access to space, recognizing that sort of the sky is not even the limit for biological experiments. So there's a lot of things that we can learn about biological systems by basically providing a new environment. So the environment of microgravity, and eventually in the environments with different radiation conditions, that sort of thing. So what I'm looking to do is to bring all sorts of biology into space. Specifically, the first project that we're focusing on is looking at protein crystallography. Mm. So what we've, and I say we, this is the royal we, what scientists and astronauts have found on the space station for the last 20 years, and again the shuttle before that, is that proteins will actually crystallize much more efficiently in microgravity than they will on Earth. And getting protein crystals is a really important thing for a lot of us as biochemists, because that enables us to get an atomic level structure of these proteins. And so when we understand the very tiny, minute atomic level details of these proteins, then we can get a better understanding of how they function. And that's important for all sorts of, basically anything in life that has proteins, which is pretty much all of life. So if we can understand proteins, say, in a disease or in a bacteria, we can understand that disease more, or we can create new antibiotics. There's just a limitless amount of things that we can do when we have those crystal structures. And protein crystals are a really good way to do that. And it's much easier to get protein crystals in space. So that's one of the things that I'm looking at right now.
So you applied to the astronaut corps, and you got to almost to the end of the selection process. Can you talk more about that journey?
Again, growing up in the shuttle era in southern Indiana, you know, we had several. There were several astronauts that grew up in southern Indiana, so it was sort of a thing that I always knew about growing up in southern Indiana. And then Purdue University is sort of the cradle of astronauts. So I think we've graduated over 20 astronauts from Purdue University. So,
wow.
So aerospace has sort of always been around me, but I was, you know, I never knew it was a, you know, a legitimate possibility for, you know, for a plant biology major to actually get into something as prestigious as NASA and the astronaut corps. But I have several friends that are working for NASA, and just happened to have a friend back in 2015 that was working at the Kennedy Space Center, and basically posted on Facebook that NASA was looking for its next class of astronauts. And I'm sitting there eating my breakfast, and I was like, well, that's pretty interesting, it looks pretty cool. And sort of clicked on the link and thought, well, yeah, I sort of meet the minimum requirements, that's all right. And then I just read more and more about, you know, what is involved with being an astronaut, from the teamwork to the science to the exploration, just, it basically encompassed everything that I am and that I want to be. And so I applied and thought, why not? Along with 18,000 of my other best friends. And again, didn't think too much about, you know, how far I could get, because there's a lot of phenomenal people out there that have been wanting to be astronauts for their entire lives and have trained very specifically to get there. And again, I went the plant biology route and biochemistry route, and that's not a typical way into the astronaut corps. But I was incredibly honored and humbled to get quite a ways through the process. And along the way, it really changed my perspective as to what was possible with my own research. Again, it got me really looking at the research that's been done on station and that we're eventually going to do if we're eventually going to have, you know, bases on the moon and Mars, and the research that we need to do in order to make those things possible. And really started trying to understand how my research could fit into that and how I could make a valuable contribution to that research. And so, that whole process sort of changed my perspective as to what I could contribute and what my teams could contribute to that research. And so that sort of changed the direction of my research here at the University of Canterbury.
Hmm. And so you applied when you were already here in New Zealand?
That's correct, yeah. So I was basically at the start of the application process, I had sort of started a new postdoc position, and that got me through that position.
And what does it actually involve? Like, do you send out a paper or online application, or what other things was there?
The initial call for applications goes out through USA Jobs, like any other job for NASA.
That's really
it's just sort of it's a government job, and you apply like any other government job. And it's a pretty simple application. I can't imagine being part of the astronaut corps and having to look through thousands and thousands and thousands of these applications. A lot of respect for the members of the astronaut corps that have to go through all those applications. But yeah, so then it's, you know, from the application stage, it goes through several rounds of selection from the highly qualified pool, in which you've made it if you get through, if your references are contacted, and then it's a series of interviews. The last round was an initial interview and a final interview there at the Johnson Space Center in Houston.
Wow, so you got to go to Johnson. How does that experience feel?
It was a phenomenal experience. Again, just really changed my perspective as to, you know, the possibilities that are out there. And more than anything, it was just getting to meet all the people that are associated with the program, both the human spaceflight program, as well as, you know, everyone there at the Johnson Space Center, from the administrators to the trainers there in the neutral buoyancy lab to the engineers that are working on, you know, sorting out all of the algorithms to actually get people up into space. For me, the coolest thing was seeing that teamwork and that commitment to a higher goal. And it was just really, really inspiring to be part of that for just, you know, a fraction of a little bit of time. And again, that's something, you know, obviously it would be phenomenal to be a part of that, but as my career progresses here at the University of Canterbury, if I can replicate that, at least in a little way, here at Canterbury and across New Zealand, I think that would be a pretty good career path as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned that the application process sort of like changed your perspective on what's possible and what's impossible. So I'm going to ask you about one thing that is not really related to space, but your experience about rowing. And it seems that you went through this really life-changing adventure. Can you talk more about that?
Absolutely, yes. So I guess another life-changing event was it was a day walking on campus at Purdue University with a big, you know, 60-foot-long yellow boat standing out there. I'd never rowed a stroke in my life in a competitive rowing shell, and decided to go to the call-out for the rowing team, and that in and of itself completely changed the direction of my life, was joining the Purdue rowing team. You know, just met all of basically my family there at Purdue for the next 4 years. You know, we're going, you know, you're training at 5 a.m, you're going to practices and races and basically, you know, eating and, you know, training and just all the time that I had that wasn't in the lab or in classes with my rowing team. So really developed a passion for rowing there at Purdue and knew I wanted to continue rowing after I graduated. And most people go on to either, if you're really good, you go on to the Olympics. If you just want to row competitively, you get into a club program. But I decided to go a different route, and one of my teammates, Emily Cole, and myself decided to row across the Atlantic Ocean. Which, had we known what we were getting ourselves into in, I guess it was sort of 2003, 2 years before the race, we may not have started, because it was quite the adventure just getting to the starting line. So we attempted in 2005 to row across the Atlantic Ocean from the Canary Islands to Antigua as part of the Woodvale Events Atlantic Rowing Race. And we had a bit of an adventure in 2005.
Yeah, as I understand it, you had some harrowing experiences. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so 2005 was the fourth race of its kind. So Woodvale had races in 97, then 2001 and 2003, and then the race has been run every 2 years sort of since then. And prior to 2005, the three previous races, people would break an oar, or their water maker broke down, because we're fully self-supporting crews. And if they had to get, supported or resupplied, then they were technically out of the race. But, it wasn't life-threatening. It wasn't, too harrowing an experience. Of course, there were storms in the previous races, but nothing that would really put off would-be adventurers. 2005 was a different beast. So 2005, we were actually training in the earlier part of the year down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And if you recall, it's been a few years ago now, but 2005 mm-hmm. was the year of Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. And it was quite the extensive hurricane season. And so when we went to the Canary Islands for the start of the race in November, and the race was going to start sort of the end of November there, the Canary Islands had their first tropical storm in 15 years. So a little bit of a foreshadowing of what was to come. But we started the race on sort of record-breaking conditions. A fleet of 26 boats started out in the first couple weeks. We're not too bad. Then there was a Hurricane Epsilon was a couple hundred miles away from the fleet that sort of pushed us back and gave us some storms in the first couple weeks. Nothing terrible, but it sort of prevented forward progress of the fleet. And then that sort of went away, and we kept going through Christmas and New Year's. And basically, after New Year's, it wasn't very good weather for the majority of the fleet. So we were looking at 10-meter waves, 30-knot winds for the next couple weeks there, which was Tropical Storm Zeta was about 200 miles to the north of us, just pushing down tropical depressions and cyclonic winds and basically preventing quite a bit of the fleet from any forward progress and many, many capsizes. And so the night of January 15th, there were quite big waves and clouds that were covering the stars and the moon, so there was very little visibility. So basically, Emily Cole and myself decided it was a bit too dangerous to be outside rowing, so we got into the cabin, went through the night, went through the next day. Long story short, about 4:30 that afternoon, we got hit by a rogue wave and capsized.
Wow.
1,400 miles from the nearest dry land, 46 days into the race in 10-meter waves and 30-knot winds. So, yeah, spent 16 and a half hours on the top of the upturned hull before we were rescued by a tall ship. Yeah.
I can just imagine how difficult that was. And so how does that change your perspective on life with such a death-defying experience?
Like many things in my life and like many things I think in all of our lives, the decisions we make and sort of the serendipity of life, we can't predict how it will change us, but it absolutely does. And I mean, the capsize was 14 years ago and it's still affects my everyday decisions and my everyday gratitude for just being alive.
Yeah.
I literally would not be here speaking with you today if it was not for the U.S. Coast Guard and the crew of the Stavros Niarchos and the Woodvale crew. And so just, even on the worst days, just to be here is still, just an absolute blessing. And so it totally changed, my outlook on life. and the fact, you know, there's challenges, whether it's personally or professionally, or, you know, trying to get research going and projects going and all that. But I'm here. I'm able to do it. And so, I wouldn't wish a capsize on my worst enemy, but I'm grateful for that experience and for being here now.
Wow. That's such a great story. So let's go back to your research. Last year, you got a grant from Calhoun Innovation. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you talk about it at all? What is the significance of your research to potentially the space research and environment in science here in New Zealand?
Absolutely. We're really at the beginning of doing research in space here in New Zealand. Having a launch provider being one of just, you know, a dozen or so countries that actually have launch facilities to get research into space it's just huge for New Zealand. And so, yeah, so the MB grants, the MB Catalyst grants have allowed, you know, there's six different groups now that have, you know, space specific funding to actually get research into space. So it's really, really exciting for me. Like I said, I've got a whole host of things that I eventually want to get into microgravity to research. And again, this particular funding, and then, you know, both MB and the space agency's commitment to space here in New Zealand really opens up all sorts of opportunities for doing research and development in space. So what we're looking at, like I said, specifically is protein crystallization, because we know it can be done on the space station. We know it's a really valuable thing to be able to do. And really, up until now, New Zealand researchers haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to get their research into space. Mm. Just geographically, it's difficult to get these, you know, these really sort of finicky, very fragile proteins, you know, all the way across to either Kennedy Space Center or to Baikonur, to get them into the racks to get up to the space station, and then to get them back. Again, once they're in crystal form, they're even more fragile. So to try to get them back here to New Zealand or to Melbourne to the Australian synchrotron is a very difficult thing to do. But if we can launch these experiments from New Zealand soil and potentially get them back here, which is a whole other area of the research that hopefully eventually we'll be able to do. But it, like I said, it just opens up all sorts of opportunities for Kiwis and anyone sort of in Australasia to be able to do research in space. And so I'm really excited to help get that research going. And the funds from the Catalyst grant are really enabling us to do that.
And how big is your research team?
So we're starting out small. So I'm just a brand new lecturer here in the School of Product Design. So my research team, you know, here at Canterbury is quite small, but I've got some phenomenal collaborators. So we've got a research team that we're working with at Arizona State University that's helping us with part of the payload development. We've got some phenomenal collaborators at the University of Auckland that are CubeSat experts. And then we've got some phenomenal people here in Christchurch that, again, are both, you know, experts in CubeSat development and payload development. So we're a small team starting out, but we've got phenomenal expertise across a range of disciplines that is really what is going to make our project work, is that diversity of skills, both across disciplines and across geography. And I think that's what makes it a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, especially with the collaboration kind of like all over New Zealand. But talking about Christchurch as well, I know that you sit on an advisory board for the aerospace community here in Christchurch. Can you talk about more about the strengths of the area and the up-and-coming sort of benefits of the aerospace industry, sort of like for Christchurch, Canterbury, and for the rest of New Zealand?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most exciting things, is that sense of community that we're all building together. And for me, coming from a biochemistry background, just all the different range of expertise that we have that's already here, and that we're incubating and bringing into Christchurch and New Zealand. Obviously, that's been helped quite a bit by the success of Rocket Lab. But here specifically in Christchurch, we're just building this momentum that for me is just incredibly exciting. So yes, I'm a member of the committee for Aerospace Christchurch, formerly the Christchurch Aerospace Center. And so we are, you know, becoming more of a sort of an industry led body that's basically looking to develop aerospace, just sort of in general, but very much industry focused here in Christchurch. So seeing companies like Dawn Aerospace that are based here now and are going to give us another opportunity for getting, you know, whether it's satellites or experiments or what have you, into microgravity. You know, all these different industries and all these different corporations are now setting up here in Christchurch. And what's really cool for me sitting at the University of Canterbury is that, you know, we're developing these programs. We've got some phenomenal students with UC Aerospace, you know, building these rockets that are, you know, internationally competitive rockets. And being able to, you know, to train these students here at the University of Canterbury and then to develop jobs for them to stay in Canterbury, for me, is just, I mean, it's almost indescribable how great it is to be able to be a part of that. And to, like I said, to help incubate that is just awesome. You know, I've got, you know, students sort of in their second and third years that never thought they would be able to stay in Christchurch, that wanted to stay in Christchurch. You know, this is their home, this is their where they want to be, but they also want to be aerospace engineers. Right. Well, we're creating that opportunity for them. And then to have my biochemistry students that are like, well, I've always been interested in space, but I never knew how I could get into something, into space. And we're creating, you know, these absolutely brand new opportunities that weren't opportunities a decade ago. So it's a lot of fun to be a part of.
And so being closely linked with this growing community, do you see any potential, or do you see niche markets that you're already kind of seeing that's coming out? If you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I think what's really cool is that it's hard to predict. I mean, there'll be new niche markets that aren't a thing yet.
Yes.
That whether it's my students or an entrepreneur here in Christchurch, or, you know, just basically the opportunities are limitless. I mean, for me, I would love to be able to have Christchurch be a hub for microgravity research, whether that's biological experiments, material science. Again, the opportunities are limitless. I mean, I'm quite biased that I would love to see, you know, biological research in space be centered here in Christchurch and basically for UC to be able to lead that research. So, I mean, if I wanted to bet on myself, I would say, you know, in 10, 15 years time, you know, UC, you know, University of Canterbury is going to be the center of biological research in space.
That would be awesome.
That would be phenomenal. Again, I've got probably a dozen ideas of things that I'd like to get going. And if they get going, then hopefully the funding agencies and the venture capitalists will get behind us. But there's just, you know, right now, research in space is a fairly, you know, emerging thing. We've only been doing it for, you know, the last couple decades. And I'm curious to see, you know, what our students can come up with and what we can help them develop.
Yeah, and speaking of students, so part of this podcast is really to kind of like help the younger generation really think about space as a pathway and career or a career pathway for them. What would you recommend to either university students or even high school students today that are looking into this industry and the potential for them? What should they do? What should they be looking at? What should they be learning?
That's a great question. And I think the biggest piece of advice I can give is sort of the biggest piece of advice I was given as I was going through astronaut candidate selection. Is find what you love, right? So if you love space, that's awesome. What is it about space that you love? Is it, you know, the potential to find new planets? Is it the potential for humans to live on Mars? Is it the potential to create a rover that's going to explore Jupiter? I have no idea, right? But whatever it is you love and whatever aspect of science or engineering that makes you love space, pursue that. Right? Because again, there's all sorts of opportunities to get into space science and engineering. So, and for me, as a plant biologist and a biochemist, you know, I would love to be able to get my own experiments that I'm working on here with fungi into space. And so that's what I'm focusing on. But again, whatever it is you love, there's an opportunity for you to get involved with space, you know, doing that which you love.
And in your particular love, can you share your vision of how you know, biology and plant research can you know, can potentially be sort of a critical factor to how we settle sort of the rest of the solar system at some point in time? Because like, I see it as a critical piece of how we can be sustainable. And so just wanted to get your thoughts on
that. Yeah, absolutely. So what the research that I've been doing the last couple years has mostly been focused on filamentous fungi, which is sort of like the mold that grows on your bread, right? Doesn't seem like it would be the answer to our sustainability problems, but if I have my way, then I think we will. So basically, these filamentous fungi produce a lot of really cool chemicals. So, you know, fungi like penicillium is where we initially got penicillin, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of these filamentous fungi produce a lot of really cool what we call secondary metabolites. So these are chemicals that they don't need to survive, but that help them establish, you know, a specific environmental niche. So they make everything from antibiotics to anti-cancer agents to insecticides, a lot of really cool things. And as a biochemist and a synthetic biologist, once we understand the molecular machinery of how those chemicals are made, so the biosynthetic pathways that actually make those chemicals, then we can start to mix and match those bits of machinery, the enzymes that actually make them. And so we can make new pharmaceuticals, new agricultural compounds, or in the case of surviving on a different planet, we can make new foods. So if you can take a filamentous fungi that normally would not make your bread taste very good, if we can, you know, tweak that a little bit to make some flavors or some nutrients that aren't normally produced in them, then we can create a whole suite of potential new foods or pharmaceuticals or building right. materials. And so between you know, fungi and cyanobacteria and very, you know, small and sort of biologically more simple organisms than, say, a cow or a pine tree, that we can create basically all the materials that we'll need to live on another planet via biology, using right. the resources that are found on that planet or wherever we find ourselves. So that, for me, like I said, is just really exciting to be, you know, where we're at scientifically with synthetic biology and having the sort of biological tools to manipulate organisms to make really cool new things, and then having the opportunity, you know, to think about going to space and having the technology to get us, you know, to another planet. So the combination of the biology and the space tech side of things is a lot of fun.
Do you see any connection between New Zealand being at the forefront of agriculture and food production? Is there any connection to that and its potential to be also on the forefront of space biology in the future?
Absolutely, right? So we are very much an agricultural nation. Yeah. You know, primary industries are a significant portion of our economy. And even as the demand for our current exports, you know, fluctuates, there's still going to be demand for primary products, right? So we have phenomenal teams of scientists throughout the country that are working in synthetic biology, and we have phenomenal people across the agricultural sector that are looking to provide food and building materials and lots of different primary products. So we have expertise across a whole range of the economy. And like I said, as, you know, demands change across the world, as technology changes, as, you know, as industries get disrupted, obviously that can be a very scary thing for certain sectors. But that doesn't mean that industry will be gone. It just that it will be changed. So, you know, with the potential of, say, cellular agriculture, you know, if we're producing, you know, let's say it's not here yet, but potentially if, you know, we're producing milk in yeast rather than producing it in cows, there are definitely differences in sustainability we're still working on it, you know, as a scientific community to get it to where it needs to be sustainable. But potentially, you know, if we can get these microorganisms to be really efficient in producing these proteins and sugars and things like that, then it has the potential to disrupt an entire industry. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we're totally gonna to get rid of a whole sector. It's just going to change. And so I think we have the ability to really lead from, you know, from the New Zealand science side of things, with some of these new sort of agriculture and microbiology techniques.
Really cool. So my final set of questions are about your recommendations. And again, this is geared towards potentially anybody out there who would want to emulate or follow your footsteps. And so can you give us some recommendations on your go-to, say, resources, either books or online, that you would recommend?
Yeah, sort of all over the place. I mean, again, it sort of comes back to find what you love. You know, obviously NASA.gov is a great place for you know, understanding sort of what's going on within NASA. Obviously all the space agency websites are always good places to go. And a lot of them have social media accounts that sort of give updated, you know, events and things that they have going on. As far as, you know, other places to get inspiration, you know, science fiction is often a good place to go. So, you know, one of my favorite books and then movies is The Martian, because I would absolutely love to be a space botanist. That would be pretty much the ultimate. I wouldn't want to stay on Mars without a chance of coming back. But to be able to do research on Mars would just be absolutely the ultimate. And, you know, it's inspiring to think about that being an actual possibility. So, you know, reading The Martian was a pretty big one for me.
If you ever go out in space, is there a particular either planet or asteroid that you are specifically wanting to go to?
That's a great, depends what's possible or what I would love to do.
Well,
I mean,
what you would love to do.
I mean, some of the moons around the gas giants would be phenomenal. Obviously Mars is a little bit more attainable, but yeah, if we could get to some of you know, some of the moons around Jupiter and Saturn, then that would be a lot of fun. But
and in terms of educational degrees, is there any specific path that you would want to recommend if they were pursuing biology?
I mean, I would say University of Canterbury here. It's been pretty good. No, honestly, whatever is affordable and attainable for you, that's what you should do. And then wherever you go, just do the very best that you can and take advantage of as many opportunities as you can. What I've found is it's not, you know, the degree, it's what you do with the degree. Mm. So again, reaching out to be involved with clubs and reaching out to get internships and reaching out to do as much as you possibly can wherever you're at. That's the important thing, I think. You know, when I'm looking at students and their, you know, and their qualifications and that sort of thing, it's what they've done, it's not where they've done it. There's a lot of phenomenal institutions here in New Zealand and globally. It's what you've done with the, you know, the resources that you have. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, cool. So before we close, do you have any other general recommendations for space enthusiasts in New Zealand out there who want to pursue a career in space?
Come to Christchurch, because that's where it's going to be. No, like I said, do what you love and do it really well. Do it to the best of your abilities and reach out and find mentors. There's a lot of us that are really excited about the industry and excited about what New Zealand can do, but none of us can do it by ourselves. And there's a lot of us out there that are more than willing to give our advice. Hopefully it's good advice to budding space enthusiasts. So definitely reach out, and we're more than willing to help you guys.
Awesome. So thanks, Sarah, for sharing your thoughts and insights to the New Zealand community. To our audience, if you like our work and would like to support us, please check us out on spacebase.co. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.